Welcome back to the Grief Observe podcast. I'm your host, Brad Morrell. And if you want to be on the podcast to tell your story of grief, please contact me at griefobservedpodcast@gmail.com or find me on Facebook, just facebook.com/griefobservedpodcast. Just kind of give me a little bit of a heads up on who you want to speak about and a little bit about your grief story, and we'll get you on here just like we are with our guest today. My guest today is Twyla, and she wants to speak about the loss of her fiance. Twyla, thanks for joining me today. How are you?
I am fine, Brad. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I appreciate you. You're an implant here into Tennessee as well. I'm on the east part and holding that down, and you've kind of got the middle ground. So, I appreciate you being here. And, anyway, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are, and we'll just kind of start there and just see where this conversation takes us, okay?
Perfect. Again, I'm an open book, so anything you want to ask, you're more than welcome to. A little bit about myself. That comes with a whole book. But my name is Twyla. I am in Middle Tennessee. I am about to be 46 years old in just a few weeks. I never thought I'd be to 46, but some of us don't make it that far, so I am counting my blessings.
There you go.
So I am an entrepreneur. I wear many hats. I have three grown children that are just absolutely amazing, and definitely they have learned a lot from mom because I have been through it. I've been in Mississippi my entire life until 2.5 years ago, and I decided that it was time for me to spread my wings, that my kids were pretty much grown, they were self-sufficient, and I thought, what am I going to do with myself? So I reconnected with an old high school friend who I did not date in high school because I thought he was a little arrogant in high school. So I didn't date him in high school, but we reconnected. I was actually scrolling through TikTok, and he was TikTok famous. And really didn't think he would give me the time of day or remember me. Because in school, I was not the most popular girl, but that's okay. I held my own. So I ended up sending him a message on TikTok, and I was like, hey, looks like you're doing fantastic. You're probably not going to remember me, but just wanted to say hi. And it was probably less than an hour. I got a response back out of who knows how many girls were in his inbox. And he was like, how could I forget the cutest girl in math class? And I was like, oh, shuck, he does remember me. Okay, Dan. Okay. So we just got to chit-chatting, and my life had taken a bunch of turns, and so had his. And so he was like, hey, if you're ever in Nashville, I would love to take you on a date. And I think he was really calling my bluff because I didn't think he thought I'd get in my car and come. So I did. I drove the 7 hours to see him for that weekend. It was the most amazing weekend ever. It's kind of crazy because Jason was very, very faith-based. His dad was a preacher, or his dad is a preacher. And so he had always, you know, been around the word, and, you know, he had created a list. And I think the list is really important because I'm going to get to that later in our conversation, but he created a list of 22 characteristics that he was looking for in a woman. So the first night I got here, I ended up having to go to dinner with him and his daughter because his daughter had to approve of me. And she did, of course, because I got to come back. So we ended up going the next morning for coffee, and he brought his Bible. And I always said that was one characteristic that I wanted in a man, was someone who was definitely faith-based and definitely loved God as much as I did. And so he handed me this list, and this list, you could tell it was like old, like it had been in his Bible for a hot minute. And so he showed me the list, and I opened the list up, and all 22 characteristics were on that piece of paper were me. Like everything that was on that list, I was the list. And even down to the tattoos, he wanted a girl with tattoos. Well, guess what? I was on that list. That list was me. So we just totally hit it off. We started hanging out, like we never missed a beat in the time frame that we dated and that we were together. Jason had always struggled with addiction since he was 17 years old. And you're at a good place, Brad, when you sit and you don't cry as much as you did before. Like, I still well up and I still think about it because I get mad at him because we go through these stages, right? And I get mad at him because I'm like, why did he go back to his old routine? I don't know. I can't answer that. I do know that his life was good. I don't know why he chose to go back. I mean, he had everything going for him, in the midst of his addiction. And we'll talk about that. But he had been 2 years clean, before he passed. And addiction is actually what ended up taking him out. Fentanyl. He had, I tell people all the time that I hope I never, ever, ever have to look at another, autopsy report ever again. Definitely an eye opener. I had no idea, but Jason had enough in his system to kill 8 people. He had
Wow.
no chance. He had no chance. We thought that he had maybe it had been laced, in the heroin, because that's what he thought he was buying that night. And unfortunately, it was not. It was straight fentanyl, enough, like I said, enough to kill 8 people. So he didn't. He went into respiratory distress, and it basically just took him out. I tell people that what I've been through has been one of the hardest walks, and I wouldn't put that on my worst enemy. The hardest part is when Jason passed away. I'll kind of give you that scenario, what happened that night. I was sick that Thursday. We didn't live together. And he stayed in his place. I stayed in mine. Well, he had come to see me because I was sick on that Thursday. And we had a really good conversation. I really slept majority of the day because I didn't feel well. And he got ready to go and he left. And the next morning, he was supposed to come back because I still wasn't feeling well. And when I woke up at 6:30 on the dot, like, I just knew something wasn't right. I was like, something's just not right. So I ended up calling his roommate, and his roommate said that he had woke up at 5:30 that morning and found him on the floor unconscious, and that they had started working on him. The hardest part for me was accepting the fact that he was gone, because I just had this episode happen 9 days prior, where he had overdosed and they brought him back. So it was just a reality check for me, because when I got to the hospital, I thought I was going to see the same thing I had saw like 9 days prior, right? They were going to open it and he was going to be mad at himself. I was going to be mad at him, whatever. And I feel like God gave me those 11 days with him after they brought him back the first time to really, I think, more or less just prepare me for what was going to take place, because his mom and dad had both already like kind of forewarned me. They were like, this is just, it'll be just a matter of time. And so they were right. They were right. But the one thing that I did learn in this process of finding unconditional love, I had never had it in my entire life. And so I finally had unconditional love, what it looked like, genuinely looked like, because everybody always wanted to date me because of my status, or they wanted to date me because of what I had. They didn't genuinely see me for me. And so for the first time in that relationship, I had seen unconditional love. I knew what it looked like. And I loved him even through all of, that little bit of darkness. I'm going to say the month leading up to his death was not a good one, because I felt like I was constantly checking him, making, just seeing what he was doing, checking his phone, like a life that I did not want to lead. A life that I did not want to have, right? And so the day that he died the first time, because he died on August 18th the first time, and then they brought him back, and we were actually on vacation getting his daughter in college when the first incident happened. I came back with no fiance and no car, and he got to come home, and I got him back on the straight and narrow, got him back into another program, helped him as much as I could. And that was on that Saturday is when he totaled my car and died, and they brought him back on the 18th or August 18th. He came home that Monday. That Tuesday, I told you I'm very faith-based, right? And I remember having a conversation with God. I had literally fallen to my knees. I was in public, didn't even care. Like, I literally needed to surrender, right? So I got on my knees and front of a whole bunch of people, but I just, it overtook me. And so I am wailing, I'm crying out to God, and I'm just like, you know what, God, if this is not for me, remove it, remove it. Whatever it looks like, close the doors, close the windows, whatever. I you know, this isn't for me. I need help. And so that was on Tuesday, and Jason died Friday.
Wow. That's kind of a bold prayer, honestly, even for a believer. You know, that's a very bold prayer, because it basically states that, Lord, I'm okay with whatever happens. And obviously, you know, that you're talking about the death of a fiance here, and you know, obviously irreplaceable. Did it rock your faith whenever that happened, knowing that that is the prayer you prayed?
No, actually, I could feel God's grace. I could feel His mercy. I could feel His hand on me. I could feel the whole entire time, even from the time that He totaled my car, I was at peace, at just peace. When He totaled my car, I was not in the car. I was back at the college. And when He totaled my car, at the time, I didn't know all the details. I just knew that he was in the hospital. I didn't know that my car had been totaled. I didn't even know he'd been in a car accident. I didn't even know he had died until I got to the hospital and was informed of all what had happened. And then they proceeded to tell me that not only did he total my car, he totaled mine and five more. He went into oncoming traffic. He didn't remember anything. He just remembered that he had, you know, put the needle in his arm, and that was the end of that. And, you know, and he told us that that same day that I said that prayer, he had made a comment after my prayer. He's like, I wish I would have died, because had I died, y'all wouldn't be going through this cycle every so often. It would just end. The cycle would just end. And, you know, and I just told him, I was like, you don't mean that, you know, you don't mean that. And, but if it did anything for my faith, I think it really opened my eyes to, like, there is a God, right? There is a God. Because if it wasn't for him, and if it wasn't for my strength in the Lord, I don't know where I would be today. I don't know, when people are walking around and they're lost, they don't, some people don't even know they're lost, right? I didn't know I was lost. I had tried to do it my way forever. I tried to do it my way, and it wasn't working my way. And you know, the hardest part for me was, Jason and I always went to church. I would always sing "Let Me Tell You About My Jesus" on Sunday morning. I'd turn it up and I'd just sing it out loud. And so there's moments like those where, like, the first time I went to church and was by myself on the pew, I guess I'd been for about 3 weeks. And every Sunday I'd cry, right? I'd just cry through the whole service. And so I guess it was about a month into my process. And I call it a journey, because it's definitely a journey, and it's not for the lighthearted, and it's sure not for the weak. So I was at church, and I had always stuck tissues in my pocket, because I never knew when I was going to, like, lose it, right? Or a wave was going to come and crash against me or whatever. I didn't know. And so that for Sunday, I was by myself, and I don't know. I know it was definitely a God thing, because I had turned around, and I always sat in the same spot and always checked my surroundings. Well, this Sunday, somebody was in my spot. And I was like, okay, you know, all right, I'll go sit somewhere else. So I sat in the next row back, and I, you know, looked around again just to, you know, see who I was, you know, who was there, who wasn't there. Mainly stayed to myself just because I was just dealing with whatever that looked like, because it was foggy. I couldn't see, you know, like, mentally wise, I couldn't, I was functioning. I didn't know how I was functioning. So I looked around, and there was this lady, frail little lady, and she was very dirty, and which is not typical, right? And so I was like, and tears were rolling down her face. And so nobody was sitting next to her. And I walked over there and I said, hey, I was like, are you new? And she's like, she just kind of shook her head. And I said, well, welcome. And I told her my name. And Anyway, I sat next to her and took my tissues out of my pocket and I handed them to her. And she's wailing, and I'm just loving on her because I have no idea what's going on or what's happening. But I knew that at that moment she needed me versus me needing my tissue at the moment. And so I sat through the service, and we got done with the service, and she looked at me and she said, "Do you always carry tissues around in your pockets?" Kind of giggled, and I said, "Well, for the last month I have." And she said, "Really?" And she said, "Can I ask why?" And I said, "Yeah." I told her I'd lost my person, and she said, "I am so sorry that you lost your person." And I said, "People always say they're in a better place, and I truly believe that. I truly believe they're in a much better place than we are. They're just waiting on us to get there. He's already moved into his mansion. I'm stuck down here, doing my thing." It's those moments that we miss. And for me, grief has taught me how to slow down. Grief has taught me how to just sit still in my moments and whatever that looks like. Because I had a friend who had the same situation. He had lost his fiance the same way I did. And he messaged me at like 3 in the morning when this happened. And he's like, "All I got to say to you is, if you don't take any other advice from me, whatever it looks like for you, and it doesn't have to make sense to everyone else because it doesn't. So whatever it looks like to you, if it's throwing dishes across the kitchen, do it. You're gonna have to clean it up later, but do it. Whatever it may look like, just be raw with it. Don't cover it up. Don't mask it. Don't run from it. Just face it." And I'm gonna say that that has been the most key advice for me, is to face it. Whatever it may look like, it may look crazy to folks. You may stay in bed for a week. Okay. And I just tell people just to be gentle, because you don't know what someone else is going through. When I hear someone else has lost their husband or lost their fiance or just lost, it saddens me because I know the feeling. I know the feeling. But I also want to be the example for that you can get up and you can keep going. Because that's the biggest part, is keep going.
Yeah, I've heard, and I'm trying to remember who said it, but they were talking about how buffaloes in a storm actually run towards the storm to minimize the length of time that they're in the storm. So many times we're trying to run away from it, and it's like all it's doing is it's catching up to us, and then we're in the storm forever. But as opposed to turn around facing the storm and just running right through it. And sounds like that's what you did in your time of grief. Just I'm okay. I'm not going to run away from this. I'm not going to deny what's happening. And I think that's why people either delay or I guess totally lengthen the I don't know, the true emotion in the guilt. Or not guilt, but grief rather. Maybe guilt's part of that.
Well,
But
I think guilt is part of that, to be honest.
yeah, there's so many emotions that we go through, but I feel like it's more intense if we, I guess, try to push it away for a while. And just the fact that he's saying, hey, if you want to break a plate, break a plate. If you want to, run around your house 20 times, go do that. Whatever it is, That really is good advice, and I wish more people would take that advice. I may have less business if people attended to their grief more like that. That they may not show up at my office, and that's okay. There's plenty of things that out in the mental health world that we deal with, not just grief. But I just think so many times it just seems like, okay, I don't want to face this right now, and
Well, we never prepare for it, right? It's like, people tell you all the time, "Oh, when you're gonna have kids, well, I can afford it." You never can afford it.
right.
You just do it, right? So for me, the biggest thing was, is I was not prepared. First of all, okay, who wakes up on Tuesday and is like, "All right, well, I'm gonna bury my person on Friday." Nobody says that. Nobody thinks that. So, the one thing that it has taught me is to enjoy the moments, because we're so busy in life, Brad, that we forget to enjoy the smallest thing, like finishing a cup of coffee that's still hot, right? Or standing in the rain because we're too scared to get wet. Get wet. That's what life is about, getting wet, getting dirty. It's about enjoying the small moments, because you know what? They can wait.
Yes.
Can wait. You know, and I tell people all the time that, you know what, life is a journey. It is your journey. You know, people always tell me, oh, well, she's got better things than I do. Okay, so what? I'm happy for everyone, because at the end of the day, you control that. If you
Yeah.
want it, go get it. And, you know, and that's been my motto is like, you know, I went home when I decided to move to Nashville. I had just gotten my place. I'd been in my place probably 9 months. I went home and sold everything that I owned. If it didn't fit in my car, it didn't go with me. And it was a taking a leap of faith. It was taking a leap of faith. And I think in life, we miss those opportunities because we're too scared.
Yes.
And so I took the opportunity. You know, my girlfriends told me when I was coming here, they were like, what do you have to lose? And what did I have to lose? Nothing.
Yeah.
I had nothing to lose, but I had everything to gain. And you know, I tell people all the time that you can have everything but have nothing. You can have nothing but have everything. And I
Yes.
was willing to sacrifice all of it to have it all. You know, because at the end of the day, you can't take it with you. We
No.
get so caught up on what the world wants us to do or what it looks like for everyone else. And I just say, you know what does it look like to you? How do you feel? You know, and that's the biggest part for me was just really, I journal a lot in the beginning. Like I literally every morning for me, and this may help other people too, is I would get up and whatever the first word was of the day that I thought went down on that piece of paper. And throughout the day, I may doodle on it. I may write a whole sermon, or I may write one or two things. It just, whatever it looked like for the day. Because you know right away when you get up how you're going to feel for the day. You know whether it's going to be a crappy day, you know whether it's going to be a sunshine and rainbow day when it's raining outside, you know. So you already know what kind of mood you're already setting before you even get up.
You know, one thing that you had mentioned is not being prepared. And I'm a warranty guy. Like, if I buy a car, I'm going to buy the extended warranty. I don't want to fix that thing myself. Like, those days are over anyway. It's a simple oil change. You know, you got to take 12 things off of your car to get to an oil filter anymore. But anyway, I like warranties. I'm a sucker for warranties. And I know, like, Dave Ramsey, the financial peace guy, he's like, no, warranties are, you know, a waste of money, blah, blah, blah. But you know, no matter how many warranties we buy in life, there is no warranty for life, right? And it's there's no guarantee. There's no guarantee that you or I will finish this phone call. There's no guarantee that your story will be published out there on a podcast by the end of the day. I hope it is.
It will be. It will be reclaiming it.
Yes, there you go. There you go. But you know, honestly, I think so many of us want that warranty that I'm going to have X number of years with a spouse or, you know, the person I love, or I'm going to go get to see the Eiffel Tower or whatever. And, you know, the more I relinquish that thought, that facade of control, the happier I have become. And at this point in life, honestly, I don't have a bucket list. I've probably mentioned it on this podcast before. When I walked my daughter down the aisle this past year, I told her, I said, this is the last thing I ever asked God for. And she's like, you don't want to see your grandchildren? And I'm like, well, of course I want to see my grandkids. Yeah, but I just didn't ask for it, you know? So like you said, I think by simplifying and becoming a minimalist, you know, to a degree that life is happier, and seeking out true relationship with people. You know, I've got to meet a lot of awesome people on this podcast. I enjoy hearing new stories, and it's like, this is worth more to me than silver and gold, you know, honestly. And there's probably some people out there that would debate me on that, but honestly, you know, in my house, if the whole house was up in flames, there's one box that I would grab, one tote, and it literally is just cards and people, you know, things people have written me over the years, letters, you know, high school notes that me and my cousin passed, you know, 30 some years ago. That's what means something to me, and I really think that's, at the end of the day, that's the only thing that survives a death is relationship and love, right? Your love for Jason continues. It doesn't just stop when somebody passes away. But anyway, that's a long story off of not being prepared for a death, but there is no warranty, there is no guarantee. Nobody knows how long we have.
No, and the best thing that you can do is, people will talk about, I don't want to love again. You know what? That is cheating yourself. If you find it again or it finds you, oh my gosh, you better just like rein it in and hold on to it and live. Like that is the, when Jason died, I had a lot of sit down moment, right? And so I made a list of 22 characteristics that I was looking for in a person. Because I knew that if I went by my goal list, I wasn't going to steer off of it. So, like, if there was something on the list that wasn't for me, it wasn't for me, right? So I made the list. And so Jason gave me that cool idea of the list. And so I took the list, and it has been an amazing journey, for me. But I sat down and I wrote a letter to God, and I wrote an apology letter because for the last, I was saved when I was a young girl. I went to church without my parents. I wasn't one of those girls that rode the bus every chance I could get. I was at church and lost my way for a little while, and then found my way back. And then of course I lost my way again and found my way back. And that's the one thing about God is that, he's waiting. He'll just run. He's waiting, right? And so for me, it was just a letter of just forgiveness, like, just forgive me. And then I was going to wait however long that looked like, whatever it looked like. It gave me a taste of unconditional love because I had never had it before. I'd begged, bartered, and stole for it and never got it. And I think a lot of people can relate to that. But I finally found it. And so God gave me a touch of it. And in the midst of all of this, my relationship with my children had really blossomed, because they had always seen me as the strong one. And so my oldest son, he'll be 24 tomorrow. Him and I had dinner after Jason passed, and everybody wanted to come. And you have to remember, Jason was already social media guru, so he was already like worldly known on social media, on TikTok, because he was very adamant about his recovery, and he was very open with it. I wish he would have been a little bit more open towards the end, but he was very open with it, and he saved a lot of people's lives. I'm happy for that, and he's still doing that to this day without him being here. He started a homeless ministry, and so I still head that up and do backpacks and sleeping bags and food and all that kind of stuff here in Nashville. So, and then they just recently opened a house, a recovery house in Jason's name. So it's called the Malone House. So they opened it in his name. And but it's definitely been, it's been a journey. It has not been all rainbows and sunshines, but for the more part for me, I've had more sunshine. I know that sounds crazy for somebody who lost their person, right? But it just really taught me the value of life. It taught me the things that I had been missing out on. Jason would always just tell me, his slogan for me was always, just be pretty. And he's like, just be pretty already. Because that was what he would tell me when I was ready, getting ready for church. He'd be like, just be pretty already. And I'm like, I'm always pretty. So, and I can still hear him telling me that to this day. He's like, just be pretty. So right after Jason died, like I said, I wrote that letter and made the list of the 22 characteristics. And so I rent an apartment, and my girl that I rent my apartment from, we share the same laundry. And she was definitely there for me when Jason passed away, because she was the one that actually woke up to like get me dressed, because I couldn't even function to get dressed. So it had been weeks, and I had not gotten out of my pajamas. And she was like, "Is that the only set of clothes you own?" And I'm like, "No, I have more. These are comfortable." She's like, "You wore them yesterday and the day before and the day before." And I'm like, "And so what? It's not like I'm dirty. It's not like I'm going out anywhere." So she was like, "It's time for you to get dressed." And this has been probably, I don't know, almost 2 months at this point. Like I had not really kind of become a hermit, was sitting in it. Not that I was sitting in it, it was more like processing it. Like I was processing like what happened, like where am I going now? Because that's not the life that I thought I was going to lead, you know, because everybody's world's turned upside down when that happens. And so you're like, oh, well, my plans to go wherever, like you were just talking about, obsolete, doesn't exist anymore. So for me, so she was like, I have this guy. And I'm like, girl, I am not interested. I was like, did you not read my forgiveness letter to God? Like, come on. And she was like, no, really, he's a great guy. He's got his stuff together, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I'm not interested. He's not going to understand me. He's not going to understand my grief process. And so she came on. And so finally, a couple weeks later, she came back down and she's like doing laundry. And she's like, so have you thought about it? And I was like, you know what? I just wanted to blow her off. I said, you know what? The only way I'm going to go out with somebody is they show up at the door with food. And he showed up at the door with food. And I opened the door and I was like, he's like, is this a bad time? And I looked at him and I said, is this a bad time? First of all, I don't know who you are. Second of all, you got food. That's appealing. And I'm in my pajamas. And he's like, is this a bad time? I'm like, oh no, come on in. I'm like, this has got to be him. So he comes in and he sits down. I'm like, you sit over there. Don't try nothing. Don't come over here. He was like, okay. So poor fella. I tried to scare him away. And he didn't go away. And he has been, I feel like God and Jason sent me him because he has been the most easiest going, most chill guy. And he has been through whatever my grief looks like. If I'm crying, he lets me have that moment of crying. So I'm so thankful for my Paul
Yeah, it's
because
good that
he has.
he gives you that room to still grieve and know that that's grieving is a lifetime process. It changes forms, and sometimes drastically. But I sit here and think too about wow, what a path God has paved for you, because you wouldn't have met this guy had you not moved to Nashville for Jason,
Right,
right?
Jason. So I tell people sometimes that it may not be about what it looks like right this moment, that it may just be the piece of the puzzle that you need to get to the other piece of the puzzle. And sometimes we try to force things in there that actually don't fit in that piece of the puzzle. And I was guilty of that one for a really long time, until I came here. And I felt like this was home for me. And when I lost Jason, I didn't only lose Jason, I lost a lot of other people in the process. And what I mean by that is I got to a point in my life where I was always trying to be a people pleaser. And so also too, when Jason died, it taught me to really stand on my own 2 feet. And what I mean by that is I learned the word no. I also learned what it was like to just think about me for the moment, not everyone else, not trying to please everyone else, because at the end of the day, I was depleting my cup. My cup wasn't full. And so in the process of this, I'm like, you know what? There's a lot of things I reevaluated about myself because I needed to, because there was things where I was lacking in one, taking time for myself. Now I am so stingy with me. And you know what? I should be, because for so long I was everybody else, but not me. And so I finally feel like I found the best version of myself, and everyone's getting the best version of myself. And the people that, when I came to Tennessee, a lot of people said I would fail. And when Jason died, to them, I had failed. But I had not failed. I had done nothing but succeed. And I'm still succeeding to this day. And all those people that didn't believe in me, I know they're looking at me now going, wow, she did it. There was no stopping me, and there is no stopping me, you know, because I've got a huge cheerleader. And again, it's not about my will, it's what God's will is for me. And so every day, whatever that looks like. And you know, I always say, even at the worst of a storm, there's always, always going to be sunshine in the end. And no matter what that looks like, and again, not every day is going to be sunshine and rainbows, but that's okay. We embrace it and say, you know what, this is temporary. And it's all temporary. Your
Yes.
feelings are temporary. This home is temporary. Everything is temporary. And so the biggest thing is that people would just know that instead of trying to get to the next day without enjoying today, because the only thing that we're promised is right this second, because yesterday, and yesterday, because it's already passed. but we're not promised tomorrow. We never know, you know. I live a life out loud, and I'm proud of that life out loud. Even though it brings me, I have scars, but you know what? I'm proud of those scars. I used to want to hide them, and now see me as I am. Because you either love me as who I am, or you can go away. And I've, you know, God has removed a lot of people from my life. In the midst of that prayer that I prayed, he removed Jason. He removed a lot of people that I thought were my friends that weren't. And you know, I'm okay with it. I really, really am. Like, people are like, oh my gosh, you know, that stings. And you know, it does. But at the end of the day, it is not my loss. It's my gain. Because who wants people that are fake? Who wants people that are not raw and authentic? And you know, at the end of the day, that's what I want people to say about me. You know what? She was raw and she was real and she was just who she was. You know, I don't want people to not know who I am, you know, in a good way. I always say, you know, if I can just be more like God, if I could just share the light, you know, and it's important. It's important that we just keep our eye on him because, like I said, had I lost 1 second, the devil could have grabbed me at any moment and he could tomorrow. But I'm just saying, like, for this moment, I know where my faith is and I know that he restores every day and he gives me another chance to get it right. I'm just trying to get it right, but I'm moving along. So,
Yeah, righter than yesterday, right?
that's right. I'm much better than I was yesterday, a lot stronger
Yeah.
than I was yesterday.
So, do
But
you
I
have any
think,
fear of being misunderstood by others at this point, knowing that, okay, this is part of your path. You had to go through this, but yet you're seeing yourself as better through this. And that's part of what we call making meaning through grief. Finding purpose again in life. You know, and I think that's the big misconception with a lot of people is when a life ends that, you know, somehow my life has to stop progressing. And that's not it. We can't, you know, there's mouths to be fed, there's bills to be paid, there's jobs to attend, you know, but there's also the fun side of life. You know, you're talking about the rainbows and sunshine, and I always say, you know, the puppies and kittens, right? You know, the fun things in life still exist. We just have to go find them. And it sounds like you are. So back to my question, like, do you just have any fear of being misunderstood from others who don't know how you're doing this?
You know, I look at it in the bigger picture. I don't see it just as the small picture. So for me, I probably am misunderstood. I know after Jason died, you know, I'm very close with his family. And the one thing that I can say back about Jason's death is that when he died, I think had I just been treated as a girlfriend or as a fiance, I was treated much more than that. I have to say thank you to the Malones for being extremely welcoming and completely just amazing people. Like I don't know what I would have done had it been another way around. You know, not everybody's situation is the same, and mine, you know, again, not being prepared for the ultimate, right? So when he died, I really just thought, oh well, he died and I'm just going to be pushed to the side. That wasn't the case, and for me, I'm thankful for that now because it gave me closure. So I got to, you know, plan his funeral. I got to put him in what I wanted him to wear. I got to pick the music. So I got to do the things that, you know, you don't know that you're going to have to do. I you know, I didn't, that wasn't in my books to have to plan a funeral, right? So I've done it now. So, I think if I had to do it again, I could, but I don't want to. But I think for me, it's just looking at the bigger picture. You know how some people want to just take this segment and it's bad and they don't see the good of the life that they've lived up to this point. And so for me, I think it's just really understanding that we aren't promised tomorrow. So we're cheating ourselves if we don't live a life of fulfillment. And what I mean by that, and it could be different, it's different for everyone. So yeah, you know, people want to get want to discredit, oh, well, they were only together for 2 years, or oh, they were only together for this many, 3 years. And then you got somebody who lost someone at 42 years of being married. I'm jealous of that a little bit, because I'll never make it to that. Okay. But at the same time, again, it's my journey, and it's their journey. And it doesn't matter if you knew them 2 days or if you knew them 5 days, it's a loss. And you can't replace that loss, right? Just like I can't replace Jason. But I can take and instill what he instilled in me. And that's doing him justice too, because I'm not wallowing in it. I'm not sitting there thinking, well, poor, pitiful me. Well, you know what? God's promises are better than ours, for one, and I know that. So whatever that looked like, and I came to terms with it very early. I was just like, all right. Like I said, I sat at home for weeks and really pondered and said, okay, God, redirect me. This wasn't what you wanted for me. This wasn't the biggest plan. And I tell people all the time that we're too busy. I always try to illustrate God's work by having a canvas. And so we are the canvas, and we are so holding on to the paintbrush because we're so scared that we're going to like drop it, or we're going to put the wrong kind of paint on there. But if we would just let go and let God, that has been the biggest thing for me, is just every morning, God, what is your will? Because it's not mine. And I think that's where we fall short, is that when we think it's our way. We can do it our way until we can't do it our way. And then we're like, okay, I surrender. I'm done. I can't do it anymore. And I want people to know when they see my story, it is about faith. It is about faith. It is about strength. It is about overcoming. It is about just getting up and just doing it. And I tell people, no matter what it looks like, again, to everyone else, as long as you keep moving. Some days you may have to scoot. Some days you may have to do the boot crawl. Some days you may not even be able to just move, but just move. And that's the biggest part for me, is knowing how to put those feet on the floor, that you're going to have to hit the ground, right? And that you're going to have to keep moving forward. So I think people are going to misunderstand anyone's story, because I had dinner with Miss Cindy Reese after Jason passed. So it had been probably 6 months, and this one had already started talking to Paul. And at first I was a little concerned what people were going to think, right? And so my dad had come to visit me after Jason died. It was about the time that Paul had started talking to me, had come into my house, and I avoided him for a few days because my dad was coming and I didn't want him. I just avoided it. But and then my dad is really good at reading me, very good at reading me. And so he gets in the car and he's like, okay, so give me the spiel. I know there's spiel. And I'm like, Dad. And he was like, spiel, give it to me. So I said, well, there's this guy, I like him, he likes me, I just don't know, I don't want to be confused. And he looked at me, and I said, but I feel like, and at that point I told him, I said, but I feel like I'm doing Jason a non-service. And my dad looked at me and he said, Twyla, did you die? I said, no, sir. He said, then keep living. I was like, oh, he's right. I got to keep living. I didn't die. It wasn't me. I didn't do it. It wasn't my turn yet. So yeah, the biggest thing for me is I use those two men in my life that are very, my dad and then my friend who lost his fiance. Like, I hear those two, and I just keep reminding me that, be raw, live out loud, whatever it looks like. And then my dad talking about, well, you didn't die, so keep living. So.
Yeah, I've got a saying that I tell most of my clients when they come in, and I really want to live it out more than I speak it out, I guess. But I always state, I'm going to live until I don't, and I've been kind of riddled with fear a lot of my life. My dad instilled a lot of fear in me, and it's no fault of his own. It's out of love, but it's always, be careful, watch out for this, and I think I just feared so much growing up because of, I always state I feel like my dad was the Surgeon General, just putting a stamp of warning on everything that I did. But again, I want to live until I don't, and there's a difference between living and existing, right? We're breathing, we're existing, but are we living? There's a huge difference.
I choose to get up every day and live.
There you go. And it
I
is a
choose to.
choice.
It is a choice. It's a choice. I'm sad for anyone that is stuck in the pit at the moment. And I pray for those every day that are in the pit because it's easy to be there. It's really easy to be there because you feel like your world ended. I mean, my world stopped and everybody else has kept going, you know? And I'm like, well, shit, what am I going to do now? Like, I'm just out here just wandering around lost, not knowing what to do. And I know people feel like that, you know, because one minute they're here, you know, I don't know if it's a curse or if it's, I don't know, but my entire life, not one person have I had to watch die. Not one. Not my grandmother, not my grandfather, not my great grandmother, not, I have never had to watch anyone die. My people that have passed away have been here one minute and gone the next. So is that a good thing? Or is it better to know that it's coming? I can't answer that. I ask myself that all the time. I'm like, oh, would it be better to know that it's coming, or is it better to just be hit blindsided and just deal with it? Like I that's my life. That's how I've had to deal with it. And I'm just like, all right. Like I feel like in my life, like I've never been able to skip a beat. It's just been like, all right, well, back up. Here we go again. So, you know, and that's been my mentality. You know, is it right? It is for me. It may not be for everyone else. They may have to sit and, you know, think about it. But I think my upbringing for me is that I was born into a house who was very negative, very, very negative, never found the light at the end ever. I never remember my mom, my parents divorced at an early age. I was 11. So I never remember my mom ever being, I have to love her because she's my mom, right? But I don't have to be around her. But she was never positive. So I think that's why I turned out to be the total opposite because I vowed, I was like, I do not want to be her. I don't. She's miserable with life. And you have people that are walking around miserable in life. And I hate that. I do because there's so much to life that we can grasp and we can hold on to and we can see if we just see the good. Yeah, they're still good. They're still good in the world. Is there a lot of bad? Absolutely. But there's a whole lot of good out there too. And I think we miss that opportunity when we sit in whatever we're sitting in. And again, take as long as you need. You know, for me, it took a hot minute, but it was much faster in the process because I was being held in God's hands for sure. And I knew that. So, I knew that each day would get a little bit better. And do I still have my moments? Absolutely. There's moments where I've gone to eat at a restaurant and I couldn't sit in that booth because that's the last place Jason and I had dinner. And, you know, and poor old Paul was in the midst and he had no idea what was happening because I mean, what's the chances of him sitting in the same booth, right? So the lady comes and I was like, I can't sit here. And she's like, okay. And I didn't feel like I needed to go into detail, right? I can't sit here. Don't put me here. So we get, and of course, Paul's like, just, he's whatever, because he's like, okay, apparently there's an issue here. And so I get moved, and he automatically knew when we sat down, he's like, you and Jason sat in that booth, didn't you? And I said, yeah. So there's little things that still, even to this day, like still hit me. Like they'll be singing a certain song in church, and it'll be, I'll just be wailing out, and I probably can't sing, but it's okay. So, but I'm just like, it just have those moments. And I still, again, to this day, still have moments. And will I forever? Probably. I probably will. But, you know, as long as I feel like I'm doing him an honor by instilling in me what he did and knowing that he's up there cheering me on, because I can hear him. I'm like, he's like, yeah, that's my girl. She's going. You know, and that's a encouragement for me is that whatever or whoever your person was, and they're not here anymore. They wouldn't want you to just sit and wallow in it. They wouldn't want you to live life. And I choose to live. And that's what I'm doing every day and making the best of it and sharing the light, you know, and sharing the word and being able to love on people where they are. That was Jason's biggest motto was loving people where they are. And I still to this day love on people where they are because you never know what someone else is going through or what God is preparing them to go through. So, you know, I always just try to stay just focused and know that just enjoy whatever it may look like because we miss out on so many opportunities. But when something like that strikes, it just really brought it home for me.
Yeah.
So.
So I know you spoke of journaling. That's one of my biggest things that I love to suggest to people to do. Any other things that you found comfort in whenever you were grieving in I guess the intense part of grief?
I just my main thing, like I said, was trying to please myself and not everyone else, you know, because we're so quick to everybody's so quick to run to help you when it first happens, and then, you know, after a while, it's like they forget to call, they forget you exist, they only call you if they need something, you know, whatever. And of course, life gets in the way, and we just deal with whatever we have dealt with. But I just tell people that no matter what it looks like, and it may not be their turn, but eventually it's going to be somebody's turn. And just remember to just be kind. It doesn't take much to be kind. You know, it is putting forth a little bit of an effort. But I think the main thing is just stay focused and write and journal and just sit and, you know, for me, it was sitting in quiet. Like I deal with a whole lot of ladies that, you know, have lost. I just recently had one a couple weeks ago where she lost her husband, and it was unexpectedly. And she just, her advice, she messaged me and she's like, how do you start over? Oof. And I told her, I said, you know, starting over, I've started over 100 times. So for me, starting over wasn't that hard. It may be hard for someone else who that's all they ever known, right? So again, it's finding the new you, because when your person dies, you're not the same as you were before. You, to me, I came out a better person. I know that sounds crazy, right? But I came out a better person because it taught me what I needed. The lesson taught me to have a blessing out of the disaster. And so, you know, do I miss him like crazy? Absolutely. Do I miss his funny ways? Absolutely. Do I miss the, you know, going and hanging out with him and feeding the homeless? Absolutely, I do. But it's also nice too to have my surroundings that are surrounding me now, and they are so, everyone was removed that need to be removed, and everyone that is genuinely in it for the right reasons are still here. And it's just amazing what you can see when you really open your eyes to what God has in store for you. And for me, it's just getting up and living every day and just with a smile on my face. Because he did give me another chance. And he gave me something that I'd never had before. You know, my oldest one, like I was saying, we had dinner right after Jason died, and he was crying, tears were rolling down his face, and I was like, why are you crying? And he said, 'cause Mom, you finally found a love that was so unconditional, and he's gone. And he was talking about how life wasn't fair, and I told him, I said, you know what, son, life isn't fair. I was like, but if anything, I'm willing to figure it out, and I'm willing to maneuver. And he's like, I know, Mom. And then now it's like, you know, they look back over my transition, and I just wanted to be, what's the word I'm looking for? I just wanted to be the eyes that they saw, to know that they can again get back up, and they can do it, and they can love again, and they can be happy again. And you know, was there moments in the beginning where I felt guilty about laughing and having a good time and going to concerts? Yeah, I did. I did. But then I thought to myself, man, I'd be cheating my own self by punishing myself because he died. Why should I punish me? You know? And so for me, it was just about just getting up and grabbing life by the horns and just whatever it looks like. And again, it's not every day is going to be good. But if we have the positive mindset and the outlook, it will be. And does fear take over? Absolutely. Fear does take over. 'Cause like I look at this relationship with me and Paul, and you know, and people all, they're like, when are y'all getting married? And I'm like, slow down. I'm that word scares me, 'cause the last one I was engaged to, he died. You know? So there's fear in that. But then I also know too that if I live in fear, I'm holding myself back from the biggest blessings. So I'm just like, all right, God, if it's in your will, you just show me. You have to open the door. You have to be like, here's your sign.
Well, Twyla,
Go.
I appreciate you being here with me.
Yes.
Any final words for us? Anything that you can think of that we missed here?
I don't think so. I think just main thing is just Again, live out loud, live
Yeah.
your grief out loud. Don't cover it up. You know, my friend was telling me that he made the mistake of covering it up, and that turned into addiction, turned into alcohol. And I think that's a lot of things that we can turn to other things to just hinder the pain or hide the pain. And so for me, my pain is living out loud. And what a better way to do it. And to just be a light for everyone else to know that there is life at the end there is, and you're right, live until you can anymore. And that is my goal. And I don't know how long that is. I don't know if it's tomorrow, but I do know that when he's ready, I'm ready. So, yeah.
Well, Twyla, thanks so much for being here with us. I appreciate
Absolutely.
You. And
yes,
if you've
thank you for
connected,
having me.
Yeah, absolutely. If you've connected with Twyla's story, I'll have her email in the show description. And again, if you want to be on the show, just contact me here at the Grief Observe podcast. I'll have that in the show information as well. And we just appreciate you being here. And I hope you've been encouraged by Twyla's story. And we will catch you on the next episode. Have a great day, everybody.